This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show from Thursday, April the 14th, lovingly curated as ever by producer Isa Javillo. So the big theme today was the rising price of, well, just about everything. Supermarkets, new rules and regulations. We've been speaking to Tom Harvey of the supermarket chain Spinneys about that. Rising real estate prices as well. John Lyons is the boss of Espace Real Estate. It's him in the pocket as well. He's just bought a house much smaller than he would have bought a couple of years ago because the prices are much higher. And then we're talking about the SPAC attack. What's that? Special purpose acquisition company. Abu Dhabi is launching the first in the region. The guys behind it, Chimera Capital, Mohammed Hesham, has been talking us through all of that. First up though, Tom and I began by talking about the story that everyone's talking about this morning, and that is rising prices in the supermarket. Tom, so many messages coming in this morning about the inflation story, aren't there?
Yeah, I think it's when it starts hitting you in the pocket in a number of ways, then that's when things start to bite. And that certainly seems to be the case at the moment. And that's why, lest we forget, these new policies have been put in place by the Ministry of Economy. You know, this is an attempt from the ministry to limit price hiking. They are going to up the monitoring process. This is across all outlets, all supermarkets, all food vendors across the country. So it is a move in the right direction in order to ensure there is no hyperinflation of certain goods and people taking advantage of the situation to overprice goods. People might look at certain products. You mentioned chickens a little earlier on. We've had chickens come to the fore.
They
are coming home to roost, as is the reality that we live in at the moment. But as was explained there, you know, these are imported as well. And it goes without saying. I mean, just look at all the stories that we are covering today. They all relate back to inflation, be it more expensive. Who was I talking to yesterday? I was talking to a mate yesterday, looking to go away for the Eid break at the moment, the first Eid break coming up. He's been looking at flights to well-known archipelagos around the region that might be good for a little getaway for Dubai residents. And just said the prices are what's putting him off. You know, a family of four, family of five, trying to travel out to for the Eid holidays. It's expensive. That's your aviation fuel. Got people moaning about what it takes to fill up big cars here at the moment. That's your vehicle fuel.
And the Amazon story you mentioned a few minutes ago. Remind us of that one.
News coming through from the States overnight. Amazon. This is significant. Why? Because it's the first time in the company's history that they've had to hike prices. So Amazon yesterday saying that all deliveries in the United States, and you're pretty much guaranteed if it happens there, we're going to see a knock-on effect elsewhere. So it'll be interesting to talk to the people. Are they still upstairs?
They're
still there?
Yeah, we're on the second floor. They're the third floor.
Amazon saying that they will charge sellers a 5% fuel and inflation surcharge. It's going to begin on April the 28th. It's being imposed because inflation has worsened significantly in recent months. This is what they told sellers. In 2022, we expect a return to normalcy as COVID-19 restrictions around the world ease. But fuel and inflation have presented further challenges. It's unclear if these inflationary costs will go up or down or for how long they will persist. So rather than a permanent fee change, they are bringing in this new addendum. So it'd be interesting to see, whether the fee hike is going to be something that remains afterwards. The latest example of how businesses across the board are reacting to spikes in prices. Uber and Lyft over in the United States and in Europe have recently begun tacking on temporary fuel surcharges to rise. And as we know, airlines are struggling making ends meet with current ticket prices.
Obviously, something being watched closely by Khatija Haque. She's the chief economist and head of research at Emirates NBD. We asked her specifically about these new supermarket price rules announced by the Ministry of Economy here in the UAE over the past 24 hours.
The UAE's new rules requiring suppliers to obtain Ukraine approval before increasing the price of around 11,000 food commodities should help to prevent price gouging, which is when sellers increase prices by more than is considered justifiable or reasonable. However, given that global food prices have increased significantly since the start of the year, it's likely that there will be some increase in consumer prices in the UAE for these items, even if the process is managed by the authorities.
Khatija Haq of Emirates NBD. Loads of messages coming in on this one. Keep them coming.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
The UAE's Ministry of Economy has approved a policy that allows suppliers to revise pricing of basic consumer goods. Look, not going to lie, for us, the details are still a little bit sketchy. What we do know, that under the new scheme, goods will be divided into two main groups, we're told. One that's going to need approval, and the other that's based on supply and demand variations. Let's get a bit more insight on this one. The General Manager for Commercial at Spinney's here in the UAE and further afield is Mr. Tom Harvey, who's been kind enough to join us bright and breezy this morning. Morning, Tom.
Morning. How are you?
Not too bad. What about your and your team's reading of this latest policy?
Well, as a policy, and I actually personally was involved in consulting with the Ministry of Economy earlier in the year to help them to form the opinions and drive this. Overall, I'd say we're absolutely welcome what they're proposing to do. The policy splits into two quite distinct and separate parts. So the first part is about the monitoring of prices in stores. And that can only be a good thing for making sure that consumers continue to be protected and make sure that retailers in general continue to follow good retail practice and don't do some of the things that you see in other markets, such as high-low discounting, where a retailer would artificially inflate a price to then drop it down on a supposed discount. This makes sure that things are kept much more in check, and it does make sure that consumers are protected from people being opportunistic. The second element then is more about the management of inflation. And there has actually been a policy in place in the UAE for quite a long time now in relation to managing the controls of this. And so a lot more goods used to be under the controls. And now there is a recognition, much more free market sense of saying, look, some of these goods actually are very different. So as you're talking about at the top of the hour, some of the things that might be a little bit more of a luxury item, biscuits, confectionery, etc. They're now saying, look, we'll leave retailers and suppliers to work it out between themselves as to what is an appropriate level of increase in the face of the inflationary challenges that we're all facing.
Appreciate that. I love the fact that you've been part of the sort of negotiations earlier on in the year, not some consultations, I should say, not negotiations, yeah, with the ministry as well. But because it is a move in the right direction. But equally, I mean, you're a money making business. This must put a lot of pressure on your margins.
It puts pressure on margins in some areas. I mean, clearly, the commoditized items are an area where we'd always expect to see reduced margins. The nature of a commodity product tends to dictate that. We as a retailer, we're very much focused on a much broader basket of goods than just the commodity items. You know, We're known both in our Spinney stores and our Waitrose stores for what we do from a fresh, from a premium and convenience offer, and those are less subject to the same controls and you know, the difference that you get in quality of the products and the level of added value can make a difference. So it's my responsibility and the team's responsibility to continue to manage and work it out. And actually, when you get a much more free market system, you get a far more quick and rapid move from the entire supply chain to manage and create the solutions to actually to continue to maintain a profitable business.
From a consumer's point of view, you mentioned there the monitoring. We know that monitoring's gone on before we've seen certain price hikes, etc. We know it's been part and parcel of the ministry's efforts to maintain parity across the market. From what you understand, will there be an increase of those monitorings? And from your understanding of that monitoring process, does it work?
Yes, it absolutely does work. I mean, we have not had many incidents over the year when there's been questions raised, and we've always been able to have some very constructive dialogue and explain where there's been any concerns raised by the Ministry of Economy. But it absolutely does work, and it's you know, if it's good for the consumer, then it's got to be good for us as well.
Tom, I mean, just one of the other things that Rich and I have been talking about, I mean, all the stories we're reading today come back to price hikes, be it fuel, be it aviation fuel, be it vehicle fuel, be it prices over in on certain supermarkets over in the UK. It goes without saying, doesn't it, that prices are going up. And at some point, as reluctant as we are, we've got to suck up the fact that things will go up in price.
Yes, we have. I've spoken with you and Richard and Brandy about this quite a bit over the last few months already. We are subject to the same pressures because we are importing. We're very much influenced by global markets. Mm. And you know, unfortunately, we do expect to see that there will continue to be inflation coming through. Some of the impacts of things like the recent rise in wheat and sunflower oil, in all honesty, those haven't actually started to hit the shelves yet. I have been very pleased to see is in terms of how I look at our numbers and the inflation that we're seeing, actually we're up running for Spinneys and Waitrose at a significantly lower level than the sorts of numbers that we're seeing coming out of the UK. Mm. And that obviously gives me a great sense of pride in terms of what a good job my team is doing to look after the consumers of the UAE.
You mentioned it's early doors, and I don't know if you're seeing the data, whether it be anecdotal or otherwise, but are you seeing a change in shopping habits and trends already?
We're starting to, but there's a number of different trends and ways that people behave. The focus for us as a business, because of how we sit within the market, and the types of products that we offer, I wouldn't like to say that we are immune to it, but. Mm. People spend their money in different ways. What we expect to be the opportunity for us out of the inflationary pressures is that people will look at their discretionary spend in terms of how much they go and or how frequently they go and dine out in a restaurant. Mm. Or how frequently they buy their lunch from one of the delivery services, when actually if they just walk downstairs to the Spinneys underneath their office, there's an incredible range of superb premium fresh sandwiches, which actually in relation to a delivery service offer incredibly good value. Or there's everything that we've got in terms of our range of premium meals that people can take home and very quickly prepare themselves rather than going out for dinner. And so we actually see this as a good opportunity for us to grow our business.
Very quickly, Tom, we're out of time, but Matt's just written in saying buying a rotisserie chicken, prices are up 18%. They're sourced here in the UAE. They're not imported. Why are the prices going up? 10 seconds on that, Tom, if you would.
They are imported. All of the chickens that are produced for the rotisserie and a lot of others are coming from places like Ukraine and Brazil, and the prices have jumped very, very significantly.
Tom, appreciate your time. As always, thank you. Enjoy the day. General Manager Commercial Spinneys, Tom Harvey.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Let's talk about one of the big financial market stories of the week. Not the DEWA IPO and stock market listing, that is big, but the SPAC that's been announced by ADQ and the private investment firm Chimera Investments down the road in Abu Dhabi. Special purpose acquisition company with the aim of investing in a technology-focused business. It's not small change. They're talking about $100 million or 365 million dirhams. Who better to tell us more about this than the guy who's putting it together? Head of investment banking at Chimera. He is Mohammed Hashim, and he joins us now live and on Microsoft Teams. Morning, Mohammed.
Morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks very much indeed. So I'm going to get onto your SPAC in a minute and what you're going to do with it. But first of all, can we just take a step back for people driving to work this morning who've heard this term SPAC before, but they're still not quite sure what it is because we haven't had many of them here. Can we do a quick 101 definition?
Absolutely. So basically, a SPAC is a special purpose acquisition company, as you mentioned. And the whole idea of a SPAC is that it's a blank check company that we usually raise money into through an initial public offering. And this money is used within a certain time period that's already set by the regulator to identify one or more targets that this SPAC can basically acquire and combine with. So that's in a nutshell what's the definition of a SPAC.
So you've set it up. It's called ADC Acquisition Corporation. You're going to float that on the stock market. You're going to ask people to chip in $100 million, and then you're going to go hunting for something to buy. In simple terms, is that about right?
Absolutely. So basically, what we're trying to raise is 367 million dirhams through issuing 36.7 million shares at an offer price of 10 dirhams. And this will be open, I think, within the first half of May next month. And hopefully it will be a successful one.
Hopefully it will be. Now, we have had SPACs involved in this region before now, and you'll have been watching these ones closely. Yeah. We had Angami, the streaming music service, which has been acquired by a SPAC in the United States. It's based here, but it's acquired by a SPAC in the United States. And similarly, Swvl, tech startup here, went through the SPAC process, did it not? So what's different this time? Why raise the money in Abu Dhabi rather than on Wall Street?
We've been watching Abu Dhabi and we're watching ADX for some time now. We believe ADX have been having a very good run for the past 18 to 24 months. And once we were informed that there is a framework coming out for SPACs, we were very excited about it, especially that the UAE at the moment is home for so many companies and unicorns. As you mentioned, we have Angami, we have Swvl, and I'm sure we have a lot more that we can look at. So the current liquidity, the high liquidity of ADX, the best-in-class infrastructure, absolutely, of the UAE in general, is our driver for basically choosing the UAE and ADX to list on.
So the point of SPACs is before you list, you don't say what you're going to buy. So I know you're not going to give us a list of like three or four targets that you might have, but would it be a regional company, or might you end up buying a tech company in Singapore or Australia or Nigeria?
Most likely it's going to be a regional company. As I said, we have a lot of very, very good and high prospects within the UAE and the GCC at the moment. However, it's going to be a tech-driven company, but we don't yet have a specific focus. Like in our SPAC, we did not specify a certain sector. We've kept it open because we don't want to be limited by one sector, because it, just in case we stumble upon or we come across a great potential company that's outside a certain sector, we want to have this basically flexibility to go and be able to merge with it, the SPAC.
So Business Breakfast listeners, they're driving to work or sitting on their sofa watching us on TV now thinking, okay, well, I can buy shares in this. Maybe they've bought some shares in Diwa, didn't get quite as many as they wanted. They've got a bit of spare money, looking for a home. What's going to be the investment process? What happens from now?
So at the moment, we're finalizing some documentation with the regulators and the market, ADX. Hopefully, we're targeting to open the subscription in the first half of May. The subscription will be for retail investors and institutional investors. Once we open the subscription, once the subscription window is closed, we will do the allocations. Afterwards, the listing will debut on ADX.
Fine. So people can just buy shares in it and they can take a punt.
Absolutely.
I'll tell you what this reminds me of. And again, you've been in this region a while, so you've got a long memory. About 6 or 7 years ago, we had a couple of greenfield IPOs here in Dubai. Not quite SPACs, but you had Amanat, which raised money to invest in healthcare and education companies predominantly, and that's done quite well. You also had the company, I forget its name, the one that didn't succeed, bought Rimal Bawadi and various other investments, and it was dissolved and investors lost pretty much everything that they put into that. So the Greenfield IPO has, you know, a mixed record in this region. What do you say to that?
It's not a Greenfield IPO because we are going to be acquiring an up and running business in a growth phase of its cycle. It's not a greenfield. The SPAC itself is a blank check company. It's a sort of an empty entity, empty shell. But once we do the business combination, it will not be a greenfield company, because we are buying a up and running business with proper management, proper business plans, proper growth plans, and this is our thesis basically. So we are targeting companies that have proper management, strong, very, very strong managements, very strong business trajectory, very high growth, and disruptive technologies that would change markets.
Finally, there's a lot of competition for good, strong tech companies like the ones that you mentioned. So if they're doing well and they have all the dynamics that you speak of, there's going to be quite a long queue of investors around the block looking to buy them, whether it's like the BECO Capitals of this world or whether it's some of the big global investment funds. They're all going to be sniffing around. Is there still value in local tech companies?
Absolutely. So a lot of these companies reach a certain stage and a certain phase of their lives where the next step is to become a public company and to find different sources of funding other than the usual private equity source or debt source. And these companies are what we're looking for because we would be fitting each other perfectly.
Mohammed, it's great innovation down the road in Abu Dhabi. Always glad to hear about that in the financial services industry.
Much.
Appreciate you joining us this morning.
Thank you. Have a good day.
I will do. Thank you very much indeed. And you, sir, and Ramadan Kareem, Mohammed Hesham, Head of Investment Banking at Chimera. He's also the Chief Financial Officer of the SPAC known as ADC.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Yeah, let's dive into some of those big property stories, if we can, with our friends from Espas. The Managing Director of Espas Real Estate is John Lyons. He joins us live in the studio. Morning to you, John.
Morning, Richard.
All good?
Very well, thank you.
How are you? All well indeed. Good to have you with us. Thank you so much indeed for your time this morning and for being here to discuss some of the big talkers of the day. None more so than the record breakers out there at present. One of our headlines today is, of course, these latest findings from CBRE. Total volume of transactions in Dubai's residential market reaching well over 7,000, almost 8,000 in March 2022. Records, they keep on tumbling. Why?
Well, I think there's obviously great excitement about how active the market is at the moment, and there's good reason for it. Interest rates, although they're going up, are still very low. It's still an affordable market on a global context. And there's lots of people wanting to move to Dubai and live in Dubai. It's still a great place to live. It's a safe place, and we're seeing many people moving here from all over the world, and many residents who have been here for many years are deciding to move from renting to buying.
In terms of where those buyers are coming from, are we talking about existent UAE residents? Are we talking about international buyers? What's the sort of breakdown?
It's really a combination of all. I think that's what's making the market so active. Yes, we are seeing, you mentioned Russian buyers. We are doing business with Russian buyers buying properties in Dubai right now. But we're still doing a lot of business with people who have lived in Dubai for 5, 10, 15 years, who are upsizing, who are downsizing, who are buying a first home. And just the engagement in the real estate market is very broad at the moment.
In terms of location, 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 that old adage that seemed to ring true forever. And, you know, we've often talked about Arabian Ranches, about Dubai Marina being those sort of locations that people have sought out. Have they sort of held steady at the moment, or are there other markets or other regions, areas coming into play here?
Yes. So to understand what's going on in the market, yes, you can read these reports that obviously say that the market is increased. It's had its best quarter ever, but not all markets are equal. So when you look at a more granular level at Dubai, in Dubai, you can see different stories playing out. For example, when we look at the data for Q1 this year compared to Q1 last year, yes, we can see that the completed properties have increased by about 50%. So there's 50% more deals happening this year compared to last year for the quarter. But if you look at a community-specific level, you will see areas like the Springs and Arabian Ranches, for example, where the number of properties sold is level. It's the same. There isn't really a change. In Arabian Ranches, it's actually down 3%. In the Springs, it's exactly the same number of properties sold this quarter, Q1 this year, compared to last year. And if you look at a community like the Meadows, prime location, let's say the epicenter of where, you know, or one of the epicenters of the villa boom that took place or that is taking place, transaction volume there is actually down 29% quarter one this year compared to quarter one last year. So you've got to then really look at a granular level to understand the market. The reports are great, but unless you look at a granular level, you won't really understand what's going on for you as an individual that might be looking in the market right now.
John, what's the, when we're here for the pandemic, during the pandemic, and we were talking about the great escape, as it were, people wanting a bit more space, therefore villas became very much in demand as well. Has that sort of seen a change in terms of people moving out of the epicentre of the city? And if that is the case, is that still continuing now?
Yes, I think it is. And I think this is entirely normal and what is to be expected as we move through the cycle. When the cycle starts, we saw a lot of activity in the prime locations like the Meadows, like I mentioned. And now we're seeing transaction volume fall there, which is natural given that prices have moved so significantly. It's now a lot more expensive to buy a property in the Meadows today than it was 12 months ago. So you're seeing that demand is looking further afield, and there's this ripple effect from the epicenter out towards areas that where there's more value. The gap in value from prime locations like the Meadows out towards Arabian Ranches has widened. So when we look at our buyer inquiries in Q1 last year compared to Q1 this year in the Meadows, not only has transaction volume fallen, but we see that we're getting less buyer inquiries by about 25% compared to last year, whereas in Arabian Ranches, we're seeing 10% increase in the buyer inquiries. So that supports my view that as prices have risen in the epicenter, the demand is now looking further afield where the value still exists.
So are we sort of seeing a change in the epicenter itself? Because before, you know, the height of the pandemic, we were talking about the fact that it was going to be a ghost town and no one was going to be living in apartments, everyone was going to be living outside, etc. That's changed. We've seen that also develop, and obviously that trickle-down effect of demand out there. But have we seen a sort of change in the demographic or of people that are looking to live in the epicentre or not?
I don't think so. I think people still want to live in the best location, right, but there's a budget that has to be respected for everyone. And as prices have obviously moved higher in the more prime locations, then you have to make a sacrifice and move somewhere else. So that's why you're seeing buyers moving further afield. For example, although there's been a reduction in the number of buyer inquiries in the Meadows, in the last week, we've sold the most expensive villa in the Meadows in the last 14 years. Mm. The second most expensive villa ever in that community. There's only one property that's ever sold higher than that. Now, if you
How
look
much?
At 16 million dirhams.
Punchy.
So if you look at the CBR report, the CBRE report, it says that the villa prices are still about 12% below the peak.
Yeah.
Now, that's when you're looking at the villa market as a whole. But in the Meadows, in nominal terms, it's not 12% below the previous peak when you're setting new records across certain villa types in certain parts of the community.
It's Ramadan. Therefore, traditionally, things are a lot quieter and people are spending more time at home. You're seeing the same with transactions?
Not really. I think that we've always found that during Ramadan, the market remains active for us. People maybe have more time to go out and do viewings, but it doesn't really change a huge amount for us. There's always been this idea that, you know, does the market slow down during Ramadan? We don't find that it does. We just find that it's business as usual.
You're kind enough to stick with us for a little bit longer. We've got plenty more to talk about. Lots of questions coming in. Again, quick reminder, if you've got any questions for John, then get them in on 4001. Last one from me. It just picks up on a comment you said about people still looking for value, people still on the search for better value, which I'm accepting at the moment. Only reason I'm saying that is because we're hearing a lot of stories of people paying overvalue just because they want to get their hands on those keys in those certain places. But there's still that search for value.
Absolutely. And people are having to make some compromises. They're either having to go further afield to find the space that they're looking for, or they're having to downgrade their expectations about the amount of space that they can buy today compared to last year. I myself have just recently bought a property, a new family home, and we had to do exactly that. If you asked me 12 months ago, I would have been in the market to buy something bigger than we have actually ended up buying. But the budget only goes so far, so you've got to make that compromise.
So many questions coming in this morning, starting with Barrett, who says, I've read this week that more data is going to be available from the land department. What are they going to tell us?
Yeah, so the land department's decided to make all of its data available, which is a great step for the market. It's really following on from a trend of the last 5 to 10 years where there's greater transparency been entering the market. I don't think the data is going to be in a very usable format at this stage, so I'm not sure what difference it will make for the consumer right now, but it is another step towards more tools and more transparency entering the market, which allows the consumer to start entering conversations from a more informed position.
Yeah, because from my perspective, I mean, I find it hard enough to read what we talked about, the CBRE report today. They do a very good job, companies like that, of trying to break it down into key points. You know, here are your three key takeaways. But the thought of actually diving into the Excel spreadsheets myself, I'm not keen.
Yes, of course. And I don't necessarily think that this is not the end point. This is the starting point. So the question is now, what happens with that data? Everyone can now start to work out how to put that data into a more usable format and create tools for the consumer. And I'm sure in 2 or 3 years from now, there will be tools that make that much easier for you as a consumer to get a grasp of what's happening at a local level in your community, which, as I said, allows you to enter any future discussions with brokers or with buyers or sellers from a more informed position.
Well, happily, you don't have to open the spreadsheets on the Dubai Land Department website because we've got experts like John in the studio for us. Can I throw a few of the questions that we're getting at you, please?
Sure.
First of all, the Nabila writes in saying, I've owned my house in the Dubai Land area in the villa for 6 years. It's quite a big property, 6 bedrooms, but there's still been no increase in price over the 6 years, says Nabila. What can you share?
So, the villa is one of these locations where I'm expecting to see more demand as this ripple effect takes place. So as people move out from the epicenter where prices have risen dramatically in search of more value, the villa is likely to be an area that benefits as we move later into the cycle.
Right. Okay. So hold your horses, Nabila. Your bounce could come in 2022, 2023.
I'm sure it will.
Right. Fingers crossed. What is the future of JLT? No name on this one, but someone writes in, I'm considering buying a 2-bed apartment, but he or she says they find the pricing ridiculous. Yesterday I saw a 2-bed for 1.8 million dirhams, and that doesn't feel right. What are your thoughts?
I think that it depends where your starting point is. Prices are ridiculous if you've lived here for a while and you know what prices used to be 2 years ago. But prices are not ridiculous if you're speaking to someone who is just moving to Dubai. I myself was having a conversation with someone who's moved here from Singapore at the weekend, and he actually sees value in Dubai's real estate market based on where he's lived previously. So it really depends on who you are and whether you think prices are ridiculous. But certainly they're a lot higher than they were 2 years ago.
JLT is an interesting point because I would call that maybe mid-market. We've got the premium and we know that's booming. I mean, you sold a villa for how much a couple of weeks ago?
16 million.
No. But the record one, not just the Meadows one.
Well, we didn't sell the record deal.
Oh, you didn't sell the record
deal. There was a record deal that's been reported at 280 million on Palm Jumeirah.
Yeah. So your industry sold that. But the mid-market and the affordable has been less frothy, is what we've been hearing. Places like JLT would be maybe mid-market, then going out to, I don't know, other more affordable areas like International City. What's the dynamic there?
Yeah, I mean, the mid-market is still very active. It might not be quite as interesting as the luxury market where there is huge demand and not a huge amount of supply, which is why you're seeing some of these record prices taking place at the highest end of the market. But in places like JLT, same in Dubai Marina, there's still good value to be had. And it depends on each property, the view, the condition. There's many variable factors which will determine whether that 1.8 million property in JLT is or is not overpriced.
We've got a question about the value of having a community. Two separate questions, but they speak to the same thing. First of all, the Maidan area. Has that now got a community feel and is that going to drive prices higher? And someone else writes in about the Dubai Hills area, big ML development. Has that now developed a community and is that driving up prices? How important is that community feel to the price of real estate?
I think community is hugely important. The more established communities have proven that people, the end user market wants a community. They want to feel like they're living in a community where they can go out and go for runs and cycle and have amenities on their doorstep. And of course, the new mall in Dubai Hills is going to be a great asset for that community. Places like Emirates Living, the location is great, but the community is amazing. The lakes, the way that Emaar look after the community, that's one of the reasons why the prices have rebounded so strongly, because it's where people want to live.
A question coming in about buying off-plan. Someone bought an off-plan villa in the Victory Heights area, Sports City area, and they think they got quite a good deal, but off-plan, still good value. They bought 2 years ago, 2020.
Yeah, I think in Sports City, there's still good value. If you look at the price per square foot that they probably will pay out in a community like Sports City, you're getting good, what I would call bricks and mortar value. The off-plan market, obviously, in the last couple of years has become more active, and it's now making up a greater percentage of the pie of overall transactions in Dubai than it was previously. So I'm sure you're going to see prices continuing to move up in the off-plan market. So I'm sure this person who's bought will be doing very well from that purchase.
Good stuff. Almost out of time. Can't let you go without Kishore's question. Tom, are you going to throw this one?
No, I'm not. I haven't got enough courage.
I'll do it. Okay, here we go. Deep breath. Why is your company called Espace and not eSpace?
Very good question. We actually thought maybe we should rebrand, a verbal rebrand to eSpace, because everybody does wonder that. But it's French. It's French. If you go to, you've been in France recently, you probably saw Espace all over the place. It's a first-class service. We're clinging on to the fact that it's Espace. We've spelled it. We're spelling it out on our radio advert. So hopefully over time, people will understand that it's Espace and not eSpace.
Can't beat a bit of French in a Scots accent on a Thursday morning. John, so many more questions, but we're out of time. So come back again in a couple of weeks, will you, and answer some more.
Thank you.
John Lyons, the Managing Director of Espace Real Estate.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.